Hi, I'm Jashan Singh and you're welcome to Dr. Stephen Hawking's The Brief History of Time, Episode 25, The Unification of Physics, Part 2. In the previous episode, we have discussed about string theory, and at the end of that episode, we have some unanswered questions that we will answer in this episode. But before starting, I want to give you a preview of those questions. Why should some but not all of the dimensions be curled up into a small ball? Why did one time dimension and three space dimensions flatter out while the other dimensions remain tightly curled up? One possible answer is the entropic principle. Two space dimensions do not seem to be enough to allow for the development of complicated beings like us. For example, two-dimensional animals live on the one-dimensional Earth would have to climb over each other in order to get past each other. If a two-dimensional creature ate something it could not digest completely, it would have to bring up the remains the same way it swallowed them. Because if there was a passage right through its body, it would divide the creature into two separate halves. Our two-dimensional creature would fall apart. Similarly, it is difficult to see how there could be any circulation of blood in a two-dimensional creature. There would also be a problem with more than three space dimensions. The gravitational force between two bodies would decrease more rapidly with distance than it does in three dimensions. In three dimensions, the gravitational force drops by 1/4 if one doubles the distance. In four dimensional, it would drop to 1/5. In five dimensional, to 1/6, and so on. The significance of this is that the orbits of planets, like the Earth around the Sun, would be unstable. The least disturbance from a circular orbit would result in the Earth spiraling away from or into the Sun. We would either freeze or be burned up. In fact, the same behavior of gravity with distance in more than three space dimensions mean that the Sun would not be able to exist in a stable state with pressure balancing gravity. It would either fall apart or it would collapse to form a black hole. In either case, it would not be of much use as a source of heat and light for life on the Earth. On a smaller scale, the electrical forces that cause the electrons to orbit around the nucleus in an atom would behave in the same way as gravitational forces. Thus, the electrons would either escape from the atom altogether or would spiral into the nucleus. In either case, one could not have atoms as we know them. It seems clear that life, at least as we know it, can exist only in regions of space-time in which one time dimension and three space dimensions are not curled up small. This would mean that one could appeal to the weak anthropic principle, provided one could show that string theory does at least allow there to be such regions of the universe, and it seems that indeed string theory does. There may well be other regions of the universe or other universes, whether that may mean, in which all the dimensions are curled up small or in which more than four dimensions are nearly flat, but there would be no intelligent being in such region to observe the different number of effective dimensions. Another problem is that there are at least four different string theories, open strings, and three different closed string theories, and millions of ways in which the extra dimensions predicted by string theory could be curled up. Why should one string theory and one kind of curling up be picked out? For a time, there seemed no answer, and progress got bogged down. Then, from about 1994, people started discovering what are called dualities. Different string theories and different ways of curling up the extra dimensions could lead to the same result in four dimensions. Moreover, as well as particles which occupy a single point of space and strings which are lines, there were found to be other objects called P-brains, which occupied two-dimensional or higher dimensional volumes in space. A particle can be regarded as a zero brain and a string as a one brain, but there were also P-brains for P is equal to 2 to P is equal to 9. What this seemed to indicate is that there is a sort of democracy among supergravity, string, and P-brain theories. They seem to fit together, but none can be said to be more fundamental than the other. They appear to be different approximations to some fundamental theories that are valid in different situations. People have searched for these underlying theories, but without any success so far. However, I believe there may not be any single formulation of the fundamental theory any more than, as Gödel showed, one could formulate arithmetic in terms of a single set of axioms. Instead, it may be like maps. You can't use a single map to describe the surface of Earth or an anchor ring. You need at least two maps in the case of Earth and four for the anchor ring to cover each point. Each map is valid only in limited region, but different maps will have a region of overlap. The collection of maps provide a complete description of surface. Similarly, in physics, it may be necessary to use different formulations in different situations, but two different formulations would agree in situation where they can both be applied. The whole collection of different formulations could be regarded as a complete unified theory, though one that could not be expressed in terms of a set of postulates. But can there really be such a unified theory, or are we perhaps just chasing a mirage? There seem to be three possibilities. First, there really is a complete unified theory, which we will someday discover if we are smart enough. Second, there is no ultimate theory of universe, just an infinite sequence of theories that describe the universe more and more accurately. Third, there is no theory of the universe. Events cannot be predicted beyond a certain extent, but occur in a random and arbitrary manner. Some would argue for the third possibility on the grounds that if there was a complete set of laws that would infringe God's freedom to change his mind and intervene in the world, it's a bit like the old paradox. Can God make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? But the idea that God might want to change his mind is an example of the fallacy pointed out by Saint Augustine of imagining God as a being existing in time. Time is a property only of the universe that God created. Presumably, he knew what he intended when he set it up. With the advent of quantum mechanics, we have come to recognize that events cannot be predicted with complete accuracy, but that there is always a degree of uncertainty. If one likes, one could ascribe this randomness to the intervention of God, but it would be a very strange kind of intervention. There is no evidence that it is directed towards any purpose. Indeed, if it were, it would by definition not be random. In modern times, we have effectively removed the third possibility above by redefining the goal of science. Our aim is to formulate a set of laws that enables us to predict events only up to the limit set by the uncertainty principle. The second possibility, that there is an infinite sequence of more and more refined theories, is in agreement with all our experience so far. On many occasions, we have increased the sensitivity of our measurements or made a new class of observation only to discover new phenomena that were not predicted by the existing theory, and to account for these we have had to develop a more advanced theory. It would therefore not be very surprising if the present generation of great unified theories was wrong in claiming that nothing essentially new will happen between the electroweak unification energy of about 100 giga electron volts and the great unification energy of about 1,000 million giga electron volts. We might indeed expect to find several new layers of structure, more basic than the quarks and electrons that we now regard as elementary particles. However, it seems that gravity may provide a limit to this sequence of boxes within boxes. If one had a particle with an energy above what is called the Planck energy, 10 million giga electron volt, its mass would be so concentrated that it would cut itself off from the rest of the universe and form a little black hole. Thus, it does seem that the sequence of more and more refined theories should have some limit as we go to higher and higher energies, so that there should be some ultimate theory of the universe. Of course, the Planck energy is a very long way from the energies of around 100 giga electron volt, which are the most that we can produce in the laboratory at the present time. We shall not bridge that gap with particle accelerator in the foreseeable future. The very early stages of the universe, however, are an arena where such energies must have occurred. I think that there is a good chance that the study of early universe and the requirement of mathematical consistency will lead us to a complete unified theory within the lifetime of some of us who are around today, always presuming we don't blow ourselves up first. What would it mean if we actually did discover the ultimate theory of the universe? As was explained in chapter 1, we could never be quite sure that we had indeed found the correct theory, since theories can't be proved. But if the theory was mathematically consistent and always gave prediction that agreed with the observation, we could be reasonably confident that it was the right one. It would bring to an end a long and glorious chapter in the history of humanity's intellectual struggle to understand the universe. But it would also revolutionize the ordinary person's understanding of the laws that govern the universe. In the Newton's time, it was possible for an educated person to have a grasp of the whole of human knowledge, at least in outline. But since then, the pace of development of science has made this impossible, because theories are always being changed to account for new observation. They are never properly digested or simplified so that ordinary people can understand them. You have to be specialist. Anyway, then you can only hope to have a proper grasp of a small proportion of the scientific theories. Further, the rate of progress is so rapid that what one learns at school or university is always a bit out of date. Only a few people can keep up with the rapidly changing frontier of knowledge, and they have to devote their whole time to it and specialize in a small area. The rest of the population has little idea of the advances that are being made or the excitement they are generating. 70-year-old, if Eddington is to be believed, only two people understand the general theory of relativity. Nowadays, tens of thousands of university graduates do, and many million of people are at least familiar with the idea. If a complete unified theory was discovered, it would not be a matter of time before it was digested and simplified in the same way and taught in schools, at least in outline. We would then all be able to have some understanding of the laws that govern the universe and are responsible for our existence. Even if we do discover a complete unified theory, it would not mean that we would be able to predict events in general for two reasons. The first is that the limitations that the uncertainty principle of quantum mechanics sets on are powers of prediction. There is nothing we can do to get around that. In practice, however, this first limitation is like restrictive than the second one. It arises from the fact that we could not solve the equations of the theory exactly except in very simple situations. We cannot even solve exactly for the motion of three bodies in Newton's theory of gravity, and the difficulty increases with the number of bodies and the complexity of the theory. We already know the laws that govern the behavior of matter under all but the most extreme conditions. In particular, we know the basic laws that underlie all of chemistry and biology, yet we have certainly not reduced this subject to the status of solved problems. We have as yet had little success in predicting human behavior from mathematical equations. So even if we do find a complete set of basic laws, there will still be in the years ahead the intellectually challenging task of developing better approximation methods so that we can make useful prediction of the probable outcomes in the complicated and realistic situations. A complete, consistent, unified theory is only the first step. Our goal is a complete understanding of the events around us and of our own existence. It also have a conclusion chapter, but it gives us a huge description of what the scientists in their years and how they helped to discover a new theory. By leaving behind some unanswered questions for the human race, Dr. Stephen Hawking ends this book here. Though search for answers to these questions would never terminate until we find it. Number of scientists make headway to succeeding in understanding the universe completely. So the race is still on. So if you like the podcast, please subscribe it and follow it on whatever platform you are listening to it, and share it with your friends and family so that they can also hear to it. And please send your reviews, whether they are in the form of voice messages or written messages. And after this book, I have great content for you. So stay tuned and enjoy this podcast. Keep supporting. Thank you.